I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. The CIA, yes, immediately you think Jason Bourne, or you think they're in trouble again. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. The CIA, yes, immediately you think Jason Bourne, or you think they're in trouble again. In Asia, the CIA with their drones. The CIA, once upon a time, that wonderful acronym, the Central Intelligence Agency, was called something else, the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services. That in itself was a way of talking about one man only, Wild Bill Donovan. Bill Donovan, an attorney, a politician who never was successful as a politician, Justice Department, and famous gentleman of the first part of the 20th century. A new book, an exciting new book, Wild Bill Donovan, The Spy Master Who Created the OSS and Modern American Espionage by Douglas Waller, takes us into where that idea of a super secret agency in the United States came from. And it came from Mr. Donovan, Bill Donovan himself. We have to start, however, with who this man was. And rather than see him as this great hero working for FDR, setting up the agents dropping into France, the great victory over Hitler, I'd like to start with him at the Nuremberg trials in 1946-47, the trying of the Nazi war criminals, especially Hermann Göring. Around you in all directions, as far as you can see, is a devastated city of Nuremberg. And in these dark offices is Bill Donovan and his adversary. His adversary is a man named Jackson, who will become famous as the prosecutor at Nuremberg. But Donovan wants to be the hero again. Doug, congratulations and a very good evening to you. Mr. Donovan, at the Nuremberg trials, he's not empowered the way he was with the OSS. Who is Bill Donovan here, and why is he in such contest with the American understanding of prosecution?
Well, it's interesting because the OSS, actually, one of the things it did was very valuable was it was really the only agency in the U.S. government to begin actively investigating war crimes and planning to hold war criminals accountable after the war. Donovan ended up having a big fight with Justice Robert Jackson. It had to do with personalities. It also had to do with trial tactics. Jackson wanted to conduct the trial in a way that you would introduce reams and reams of documentary evidence against the Nazi war criminals. Donovan thought that would bore everybody to tears. What he wanted to do was have spectacular cross-examinations at Nuremberg, and what he had in mind was a bold plan to have Hermann Göring, you know, the number two man at one point of the Nazi Empire, cop a plea. In effect, Göring would rat on his fellow Nazis there in exchange for dying by a firing squad instead of being hung like a common criminal. Donovan, in fact, had 10 meetings with Göring where they talked about the plea bargain that Göring would enter into. Jackson, when he kind of caught wind of this, wanted no part of it. He didn't trust Göring. He wanted to rely on the documents. Donovan and Jackson had a big falling out over it. It was very, very controversial. In fact, everything about Donovan's life has been controversial.
Right.
And he left Nuremberg. Donovan left Nuremberg really in a huff, very, very angry at Robert Jackson for the way the trial's conducted.
Before he leaves, Donovan, Bill Donovan, Wild Bill Donovan, General Wild Bill Donovan, the man who invented the OSS, asks his wife and her friends to act as agents for him in order to entice a significant German source witnesses in a dinner party to persuade them to help him build this dramatic Hollywood case. And his wife goes along with it. Everybody went along with Bill Donovan's schemes.
Well, they did. In that particular case, the cocktail party was held with Donovan's daughter-in-law and a German general who Donovan thought could be a valuable source and a witness at the trial. When Robert Jackson found out about that cocktail party, he hit the roof. He could see that the optics of this, he could have a PR nightmare here of, a U.S. prosecutor or a deputy prosecutor whining and dining senior German generals to cop some type of plea.
I made an error, and I want to correct it, but it's an interesting error that I made. It was the daughter-in-law, not Mary. It wasn't the wife, Ruth, and that is a piece of the puzzle of who Donovan is, that he used his daughter-in-law instead of his wife there.
It did. He had a distant relationship with his wife, to put it mildly. In effect, they were almost separated. Donovan had a number of affairs over the years. His wife knew about it. She basically suffered in silence, kept the marriage together, raised their children, and helped raise their grandchildren while Donovan was away off on, you know, in distant shores with the war.
And Mary was the daughter-in-law, right?
Mary was his daughter-in-law. His daughter, Donovan's daughter, died tragically in an automobile accident when she was in college. And his daughter-in-law really took over that role of daughter for him. They became very, very close. And she became his hostess at different parties. And she accompanied Donovan to Nuremberg when he went there to begin the prosecution of the Nazi war criminals.
I'm starting with the Nuremberg trials because they're famous, of course, and critical to 20th century government. And the understanding of Nuremberg trials, war crime trials, are always going to be extant any time you come to a political contest, as we see now in the 21st century. But Donovan's understanding is more appealing to me today than Justice Jackson's understanding of this endless reams of, you know, archival proof. Let's go back to the beginning and where Donovan learned to be so dramatic, because this is a man, and Doug, often in your wonderful book, I thought you were making it up. I mean, I understand that you have the archives, you have the cooperation of the Donovan and Rumsey family. Ruth Rumsey was his wife. However, it does seem like he is just leaping out of airplanes, like a Harrison Ford in a Spielberg. Let's go back to Buffalo, who his father was.
He was Donovan was born on New Year's Day, 1883. His father, Tim Donovan, worked in a rail yard. They grew up in Buffalo's poor Irish First Ward. At one point, Donovan thought he was going to be a priest in every Irish Catholic family. There was always assumed one boy would be the priest. Instead, he realized he really wasn't cut out for the cloth. And he eventually ended up at Columbia University, where he was a star football quarterback for the football team his senior year.
Let's not get him to Columbia yet. Let's take him to Niagara, the priesthood. He was training for the priesthood at Niagara University.
Right. He was at Niagara University, was all full of fire and brimstone then. If you read some of his sermons and orations that he would craft, he was really kind of full of himself. The priests there who were his mentors gently kind of persuaded him that maybe he had a more promising career in the law than the priesthood. He certainly had the windpipes for it to be a lawyer.
And I value them that they made that discernment, that they assessed somebody who wanted to be a priest and they turned him to the law, saying that you're not for this discipline. They understood something that is it's hard to see, very hard to see.
Well, it is, and Donovan always had a very close relationship with the Catholic Church, even throughout his OSS days. He used Catholic envoys as spies, or they fed him intelligence information.
And I learned from your book, Doug, that this is not a period where Catholics were welcome in society, in government, in trustworthy jobs. He goes to Columbia University, Columbia College. One of his classmates is a young man named Frank Roosevelt, but they didn't know each other. Why not?
Well, it's interesting. Franklin Roosevelt later said that he had been a friend of Donovan's in law school, and Donovan said, oh, that's a bunch of baloney. Roosevelt was from a much higher social strata than Donovan was, and he said the two really never mingled at that point. And in fact, Roosevelt and Donovan were political opposites, particularly on domestic issues, up until World War II.
Right. The Republican from Buffalo of Lace Curtain Irish and the Dutchess County elitist who had gone to Harvard and come to Columbia College to take his law degree. Donovan is a natural attorney, and he goes back to Buffalo. And he lived with his mom and dad. He went back to live with them. And what did he want to do when he first got home?
He didn't know what he wanted to do, as a matter of fact. Like a lot of college kids coming home, he didn't know what direction he was going to take. He thought about going into politics, and his friends thought that was just, they were aghast at that idea that anybody with a fine law degree would, dip themselves into politics. Finally, he joined a very venerable law firm in Buffalo, started working his way up, and that's when he met his future wife, who was one of the richest girls in Buffalo, or from one of the richest families in Buffalo.
Ruth Rumsey. Right, but at nighttime, they started something, what was it, Troop I? They were cavalrymen, they were soldiers. It was kind of like a Boy Scout club for grown-ups, and where they were pretending to be soldiers.
And that's where Donovan started to get kind of the military bug in him. Troop I was a cavalry unit, a volunteer unit. They all volunteered for this group. It was part of the New York National Guard. They trained themselves. Donovan became their troop commander, and eventually he became a battalion commander in the 69th Irish Regiment in New York City, a very famous regiment.
In 1912, he's training like a volunteer, and when we come back, we're going to go off to the First War, because this is Wild Bill Donovan. He gets his name in the First War. It's a tribute to him. But he becomes the creator of what we call today to be the CIA. Douglas Waller is the author. Wild Bill Donovan is the book. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show. I'm continuing my conversation with Doug Waller, who makes none of this up, but it is the story of Wild Bill Donovan, a heroic man from the 19th century, from Buffalo. In 1912, he trains a sort of a volunteer group at night, gentlemen, very elitist in Buffalo. However, he marries in 1914 Ruth Rumsey, and soon after, because of conditions along the border, 1916, Pancho Villa raids, Wilson's presidency, the national preparedness crisis, the Troop I is called up and is sent off as part of the deployment to the border. I think he went to McAllen, Texas, didn't like it very much. He came home in March of 1917. We're at war in April. And now what? He's 34 years old. He's actually too old to be drafted. Why does he go to war, Doug?
He had a perpetual taste for action. And when he got over to Europe in World War II with the Irish Regiment, the 69th Regiment.
World War One.
World War One. He was eager to get into combat, and in fact, the chaplain of the Irish Regiment, Father Francis Duffy, said Donovan was one of the few men he ever met who actually enjoyed combat. And in his letters to Ruth, he would write back that it was like being a kid on Halloween night going into combat. So he really relished the fight.
And from your recreation of his thinking at this period, he wanted to know what he'd be like under fire. He wanted to know what he'd be like with men dying around him. What did he learn?
He learned that he could survive under fire, principally. I mean, he learned that he could stay calm and collected. He was a very good leader. His men worshipped him. Some of the men named their firstborn kids later after Donovan. He was a tough trainer. He was, in fact, a very brutal trainer, because he knew his men were going into a meat grinder in World War One.
That's why they called him Wild Bill, because he kept running. He's 35 years old, and he outran the recruits. Doug lays out a battle that's very important, because MacArthur's on the right flank, and they can't find him, and Donovan keeps leading his men farther and farther into what looks to be a murder nest with the German machine guns. He is shot in the knee. He survives somehow, amazingly, by being hauled from foxhole to foxhole, almost bleeds to death. Afterwards, the investigation of this combat calls into question his bravery. That is a lot of nonsense. He comes back in 1919, and now what does he want to be? I mean, what does he learn from the war, Doug, when he comes home?
Well, he was very emotional about it. About the loss of men, and it was a horrible loss of men in his regiment. Over half of the men died in France, and that really overcame him. When he got back, he was a war hero, and because Ruth had published a lot of his letters to her in the New York newspapers. In fact, there was talk that of Donovan running for governor of New York. Instead, he went back to Buffalo to rebuild his law practice and to make money.
This is an event-filled life, and we're going to go very fast right now, because he spends a decade in and out of Justice Department working for significant figures. One would be Calvin Coolidge, President of the United States, working as superior to J. Edgar Hoover, right? He was his boss for a while, which is where he and Hoover first learned that they hated each other.
It was. Donovan Rand was a supervisor of Hoover in the Justice Department, and he meddled in Hoover's operations. He would second-guess him, and when Hoover would complain, Donovan would fob him off to an aide. He wouldn't meet with him personally. And from that day on, Donovan became an implacable enemy.
And you can see the villainous Hoover over there in the corner knitting his eyes together and compiling a dossier on Donovan. I'll use this someday about his womanizing, his drinking, his cursing, the usual Hoover stuff. And Donovan ignored him. And of course, you should never ignore the little sneak. But in any event, let's go on to 1929, the Depression. Donovan leaves government. In 1932, they talk him into running for the governorship of New York. How did they do that?
Well, he was eager to do it himself at that point. And even Ruth liked the idea of being First Lady of New York. So Donovan hit the campaign trail. He was running against Herbert Lehman, who was Franklin Roosevelt's lieutenant governor. Donovan's ultimate goal was to be the nation's first Catholic president, and New York was the ideal stepping stone for that, because in 1932, Roosevelt, who had been New York governor, was running for president. Donovan ended up campaigning as much against Roosevelt as he did against Herbert Lehman.
Right.
Called him a lot of nasty things during the campaign. Roosevelt had his surrogates, including Eleanor, say a lot of bad things about Donovan. In the end, Donovan lost the election. Even though he was very charismatic and magnetic and could turn on the Irish charm in a small room.
It was not a good year for Republicans.
It wasn't, and yeah. He was a lousy speaker on the campaign stump.
The years go by very quickly. Donovan travels widely. He's always on the road. And there are lots of girls, there's lots of womanizing, but we need to race to the point that where Donovan enters into the legend of the CIA. It's 1940-41. And he meets Franklin Roosevelt, who's now running for he's just beaten Wilkie. And they're starting to talk about the need for a super spy agency. And nobody wants it but Donovan. Is that right, Doug?
Well, it is. Donovan pushed it then. And Roosevelt needed an agency, too. He was making major decisions at this point overseas, lend-lease for Europe, a lot of other things. And he was really operating blind to what lay before him overseas because he had no foreign intelligence unit to speak of. So in July 1941, Roosevelt signs an executive order making Donovan his coordinator of information. That was the name of it before the OSS. It was just a one-page document, very, very vague, said Colonel Donovan would go out and collect unspecified information for him and do other kind of unspecified work. But that was the beginning of the OSS. It started out really essentially with one guy, and that was Wild Bill Donovan.
70 years later, it's got a black budget. It spreads around the world. You know it as the CIA, but it started as Wild Bill Donovan, the spy master who created the OSS and modern American espionage. Douglas Waller is the author. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show.